Shazan, Mr. Herzog.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Aaron Herzig for Defendant Appellant Michael Chezan. Mr. Chezan has three main issues on appeal. One is the trial court's denial of his motion to withdraw his guilty plea based on ineffective assistance of counsel. Two is the trial court's determination that he waived his right to challenge the ineffectiveness of his criminal lawyer, Mr. Durkin. And third, three sentencing enhancement errors. I will rest on the briefs with regard to the sentencing errors unless the court has questions, and we'll proceed to the other issues. Mr. Chezan is a lawful permanent resident who has lived in the United States for 20 years. He is married with two children who are citizens of the United States. When he was faced with the criminal charges in these cases, his primary concern was to avoid deportation. Deportation breaks up his family. It was his primary concern. And so that's what he talked to his criminal defense lawyer about, and that's why they got an immigration specialist involved in his case. What he learned from those lawyers was that he had two paths to avoid deportation in his case. One was a plea agreement that avoided removal, or two was acquittal after trial. So that led to the question, of course, of how do you fashion a plea agreement that allows you to avoid removal? They consulted Mr. Burton, an immigration specialist. He read the charges that were at issue here were marriage fraud, essentially document fraud with regard to marriages under 18 U.S.C. 1546A. The question then becomes whether pleading guilty to violations of 1546A are or are not aggravated felonies. Mr. Durkin opined, his criminal lawyer said, you are virtually certain to get 1 year in jail, which was one of the two parameters for an aggravated felony. So the second question becomes, is Mr. Chezan, if he pleads guilty to violations of 1546A, would that be considered an aggravated felony? To determine that, you look at 8 U.S.C. 1101A43P, and what Mr. Burton said was, when you read that statute, it says that violations of 1546A, where you have more than 1 year in jail, are in fact aggravated felonies. But there's a parenthetical phrase that says 1546A relating to document fraud. Mr. Burton spun out an argument that relating to document fraud might be limiting language that would say that only certain portions of 1546A were violations that were aggravated felonies. That's one of the things that he told Mr. Chezan. He told Mr. Chezan that there was almost no case law on point at the time. He told Mr. Chezan that there are four unenumerated paragraphs in 1546A. He said if you plead to the fourth paragraph, which he aligned with counts 3 and 6 of the indictment, that those were more about misrepresentations to procure documents than actual document fraud, changes in the documents themselves. And so on his view is that he would have an argument that the document fraud under 1546A was not an aggravated felony. What Mr. Chezan wasn't told by Mr. Burton was that four courts of appeals had rejected that argument, although the Seventh Circuit had not at the time.
In the context of different statutes?
In the context, Your Honor, of different portions of the immigration law, yes.
He was articulating a possible argument that could be made in court, but not saying it was a good one or it was likely to succeed. In fact, if left with no other options, we might be able to argue this, I think was the language. It was far from a sure thing, as your client testified and tried to spin the advice at the evidentiary hearing, which the magistrate judge rejected as not credible.
Your Honor gets to the credibility question. I think the way we read the law is credibility is, in fact, not an issue here. Under Padilla versus Kentucky, when the statute is truly clear, a lawyer, whether a specialist or not, should give correct advice.
Right, but this issue was being litigated actively. It had never been decided in this circuit, so you can't say that it's truly clear one way or the other here with respect to how this statute would be interpreted by this court, as later occurred in the decision that I don't know how to pronounce.
I go with the Gorsch decision. Gorsch, okay. The Gorsch decision, Your Honor, I think is in fact the decision, although it comes shortly after Mr. Chesson pled guilty. It's when this court says, looking at the statute, we cannot imagine an interpretation of 1546A, the relating to document fraud parenthetical, that makes that parenthetical limiting rather than descriptive. It cites four courts of appeals cases that I mentioned. Since then, the 11th Circuit has come on board. I would argue, Your Honor, that where this court says that it cannot imagine the interpretation to be correct, the right answer here would have been, at least for Mr. Burton, to tell Mr. Chesson what he did not know. For instance, four courts of appeals have rejected this argument. No court of appeals has accepted my argument. Those would have been important pieces of information for Mr. Chesson to know if he was going to knowingly and voluntarily plead guilty, because his entire effort in pleading guilty was to avoid deportation. Instead of having a chance, it turned out he had no chance at all.
Well, your argument is that he should have gone to trial because he might have been acquitted. But did he have any defense?
Yes, Your Honor. He should have gone to trial. I think the question you ask is answered by the DiBartolo case in this court, which essentially says that even if there's a roll of the dice, is what the court said, that is enough to show prejudice, the second prong of the Strickland test. And so to me, DiBartolo answers that question, that even if he has a slim chance of succeeding at trial, any rational person would take that chance if their goal is deportation, not
well,
avoiding prison.
When you say a slim chance, what would his defense be?
And, Your Honor, I'm not opining on particularly his chances one way or another.
His
defense would be that the facts don't bear out the elements of the criminal case. He debated for a long time with his criminal defense lawyer about how he believed he should go to trial regardless of this issue. They ultimately, his criminal defense lawyer at the time, disagreed. But he would argue that the elements of the case aren't met. DiBartolo goes so far as to suggest that when it comes to a jury trial, the burden of proof is such, reasonable doubt with a jury in place, that it, even if it's a roll of the dice, the prejudice is such that the defendant should be allowed that roll of the dice. I see that I'm into my rebuttal time.
Okay.
I'll take other questions.
Sure.
Or.
Okay, wait. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you.
Mr. Fullerton?
May it please the court. The district court did not abuse its discretion in refusing to allow Mr. Chesson to withdraw his guilty plea. He didn't establish ineffective assistance of counsel, as it would have been required to allow him to do that. He was made keenly aware, as the magistrate judge found, of the risks of deportation connected to pleading guilty here. In fact, all of the discussions he had with his criminal defense attorney, Mr. Durkin, as well as with Mr. Burton, the immigration specialist who Mr. Chesson hired, were premised on the notion that you are going to be deported unless this argument, which Burton described as a Hail Mary, would be accepted by the immigration court.
Chesson told was a Hail Mary?
Yeah, Burton testified, and the magistrate found that Burton told Chesson in no uncertain terms that the chance of that this was a, quote, very, very difficult argument to make, and that the prospects of success were very low. It's important to recognize that Chesson.
Did he say to Chesson that the alternative would be to go to trial, and Although he wouldn't have a high probability of acquittal, it would be a possibility. And it would...
That, from what I read of the testimony before the magistrate judge, that was never on the table.
That what?
That was never on the table that Chazen was going to go to trial in this case. In fact, in November of, would have been November of 2010, right after he was indicted in the marriage fraud case, Mr. Chazen proffered to the prosecutors in who were had both the mortgage fraud and the marriage fraud case. In other words, Mr. Chazen was looking from very early on to try to resolve these two cases, both short of trial.
And so might he have gotten a longer sentence if he'd gone to trial and been convicted?
Well, he could have. His guideline range is calculated by the district court.
I mean, in other words, did he get some sort of bargain length of prison sentence from pleading guilty?
In terms of a bargain plea with the government, you know, it wasn't a plea agreement.
It wasn't what?
It was not a plea agreement. This was a blind plea that...
But did he know what his sentence would be?
I don't know, Your Honor. It's a short answer. His guideline range was 87 to 108 months. He got a 36-month sentence. The blind plea that Mr. Durkin was able to craft with the advice of Mr. Burton was, in fact, quite creative. It avoided a conviction on the mortgage fraud case, which was certainly an aggravated felony because the loss exceeded $10,000 in that case. It avoided Mr. Chazen having to admit that his fraudulent conduct extended back before 2002.
And did he accept responsibility, for example, as part of the plea agreement?
I think the government at sentencing, there was no plea agreement, recall, but I believe at sentencing the government did concede that he had accepted responsibility, yes.
I'd like to know what the risk of a longer sentence was if he decided to go to trial.
You know, I can't speak to whether there would have been a trial. I just don't know, Your Honor.
As I understand it, the alternative for him was to have a trial because there would be a chance of acquittal, although small. Because it would be small, if he had a trial, he'd probably be found guilty, which wouldn't help him, of course, with his deportation. And then the question is, would he get a longer sentence? That would certainly be material to the question, are you going to gamble on a trial, knowing that you're likely to lose, and if you do lose, you're going to get a longer prison sentence.
Right. What I can say is that from very early on, November 2010, it seems to have been no discussion by Chazen and his attorneys of taking these cases to trial. And remember, he was facing two indictments, both of which were, or could have been, aggravated felonies if he were convicted, both the mortgage fraud and the marriage fraud. So he would have had to defeat both cases to prevail on this, in other words, to be guaranteed not to be deported. So he knew that his risks were compounded by the facing these two indictments for aggravated felonies. Mm. And Durkin's efforts were objectively reasonable. They were, can't say they were objectively not reasonable. They resulted in a dismissal of the mortgage fraud, preservation of this argument that Chazen knew was a long shot, and an avoidance of a written plea that the immigration attorney and Durkin thought would provide more fodder for the immigration authorities if they came looking for grounds to deport Chazen. The absence of a written plea they thought would be helpful to them. The bottom line is that Chazen was certainly aware of the prospect of getting deported. He was certainly aware that his chances of prevailing were very slim. He actively worked with his attorneys to try to structure his plea to avoid, to maximize his chance of not getting deported, and that's what he did. And then, so the district court did not abuse his discretion in denying his motion to withdraw.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Fullerton. Mr. Herzig, another minute? One more?
Thank you, Your Honor. I think I can address a few of those questions. First of all, although I could not find the site in the record immediately, Mr. Durkin absolutely testifies in R-151, the evidentiary hearing before the magistrate, that he and Mr. Chesson had long discussions about going to trial. Mr. Durkin disagreed, but Mr. Chesson absolutely wanted to go to trial. Note, as the government mentioned, there is no plea agreement here. I think the answer to your question, Your Honor, as to whether he would get a longer sentence is no. The mortgage fraud, the facts of the mortgage fraud became related conduct in the sentence in the marriage fraud case. So I don't think there would have been a material difference there. And I would say that even DiBartolo answers that question again. It doesn't really matter for prejudice sake. There was no bargain here. Importantly, also, no one ever admonished him that he would be automatically deported if he pled guilty to 1546A. It was not in the court's plea colloquy. His co-defendant was sitting with him, another non-citizen of the United States. The court, with Mr. Zavoznik sitting there, said, Mr. Zavoznik, you're not a citizen, correct, and went through and explained to him that deportation was a consequence. Mr. Chesson, sitting there with the same characteristics, given no such warning by the court at all. Not sure what someone's supposed to take from that. I was surprised
that someone who was a lawful permanent resident would be automatically deported.
If it's an aggravated felony, Your Honor, then...
Is that the rule that...
Yes, Your Honor.
Couldn't do it to a citizen, obviously.
Correct, Your Honor.
Plus the one-year sentence.
Right. An aggravated felony is defined as a one-year sentence for the items listed in 1101A43. This one is under subsection P. The issue of the Hail Mary, a football term, not something that non-citizens are necessarily familiar with. Hail Marys work sometimes. They don't always work, but when you look at the statistics on Hail Marys, they work once in a while. This doesn't work. The government has never suggested that he isn't going to be mandatorily deported. The government hasn't conceded or offered that they would not proceed with deportation because the advice was wrong. When you look at the Third Circuit's most recent decision in Fazio, they say that the advice here has to be automatic deportation. They say that's the correct advice. When automatic deportation is at issue, you have to give that advice. They decided there was no prejudice because the court had cured that prejudice, but no such thing happened here. In the Ninth Circuit, Bonilla has said the same thing. The Southern District of Indiana has said that in Montez Flores, and I will butcher the name of Xu Feng Xia, which is in the Southern District of New York, that all have come to the conclusion that when automatic deportation is at issue, the only correct advice under Padilla is to tell the defendant that automatic deportation is what's coming. They made it seem as though he had two paths to avoid deportation. He only had one. They misled him about the case law that was out there.
So there's no suggestion that he might be able to plead withholding or deferral of removal if he were to be convicted?
No, Your Honor. In fact, they discussed the bond issue with the immigration lawyer, and he said this would be the same path to allowing you to get bond. In fact, that is not the case either. I see that my time is up. I do have one procedural request.
Sure.
We did ask for a release pending appeal. A different panel denied that but said at the time that the court would reconsider after hearing argument. We think there is strong justification for reconsidering that motion. Mr. Chesson is scheduled to report on June 8, so we hope that you reconsider it quickly and allow him release pending appeal, because we think the right answer here is to allow him to withdraw his guilty plea and go to trial. Thank
you,
Your
Honors. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Herzig, Mr. Fullerton, and the court will be in...